We're back. Welcome to Deep Thinking, the only motorcycle road racing podcast recorded while eating circus animals cookies, which are, quite frankly, the best cookies ever made.
Number 74.
Anything else is just a pale shadow of the concept of the cookie.
But we're not eating them. They're still in the package.
They're going to be, I'll bet in 20 minutes they're not going to be in the package anymore.
They're going to be eaten.
They're going to heated, be. They're going consumed. To be. They're going to be. They're going to have rejoined the food chain in a caloric providing manner. He's Ed Sorbo from Lindemann Engineering. You can find him on the web at le-suspension.com.
He's Michael Gouges. I found him wandering around in the street somewhere.
Exactly. Wearing orange parachute pants and muttering, "The Kaiser will steal my string." And if you get that reference, I will come to your house and wash your bike anywhere in the United States.
You heard it here, folks.
You heard it here, folks. Nobody's going to get that. You can find me on the web at motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com, and you can find some pictures if you need motorcycle images of bikes on the track at motorbikeroadracing.smugmug.com. Got some nice stuff out of Vegas. That was actually a lot of fun to shoot that.
We have sad news.
Sad news.
Sad news.
What is the sad news?
We have the obituary of Richard K. Ramson, founder of Hickory Farms.
No.
He died when he was 96 years old.
Wow.
Jonathan Davis sent me the press release about it. And the interesting thing, you know, 96, hey, he had a good life, right?
Right?
It's not a horrible thing. Yeah. But the interesting thing was the story about Hickory Farms succeeding. They don't do it very often, but if you think back, I didn't know there were Hickory Farms stores. Okay, mm-hmm. But I've been to places where they have the lady with the Hickory Farms table giving you samples.
Right, right.
So Hickory Farms invented that.
Really?
You went to the Hickory Farms store, and there were ladies, moms, right?
Right, right.
On every aisle, and they didn't ask you if you wanted a sample. They just gave you it on the little stick, and you had to eat it, right? And the concept was that you would feel like, I ate so much, I gotta buy something,
right?
And it worked. So, and the second part of it was that he taught his people how to slice the cheese and the meats,
okay,
so that they got a bigger portion than they paid for, always. And the genius of that, of course, was people love that kind of thing, and
absolutely,
they keep coming back. It reminded me of Forrest, of Lucas, doing stuff the honest, good way, uh-huh, right? And then being rewarded for it.
Right? Hey, what's it? What the old saying? Under promise and over deliver.
Exactly.
You know, and anything that people, that you do for people, that gives them a perception of value, you know. I put together an attractive photo package at Vegas, made a lot of people pretty happy with what they got, and that was, you know, just offering them some value. So that's always nice.
He sold Hickory Farms in 1980 to General Host Corporation of Connecticut for $41 million.
Not too shabby.
How cool is it to be able to say he has 12 great-grandchildren, 9 grandchildren? Isn't that great? Hey, yeah, my grandfather was Mr. Hickory Farms,
exactly,
right?
You may have heard of my grandfather, Hickory Farms.
So, and I'm assuming that Mr. Davis, Jonathan Davis, sent us this because of our reference
absolutely
to Hickory Farms all the time.
So. You know what else is really cool? And this is what makes me feel good about begging our listeners for Hickory Farms stuff. That dude lived to be 96, right? What was he eating?
Hickory
Smoked
Farms,
meats and
right?
cheese? Oh my God, Ed, we're going to be immortal at this rate. You know?
I don't know about immortal. There's the other balancing factors like circus animals.
Circus animals have seven vitamins and minerals in them.
Do you know why? Do you know why white bread has seven? Is that what that's from? Right?
Exactly.
With seven vitamins. You know why? How that came to be?
No.
So when you take wheat and make bread,
okay,
and then you bleach it to turn it into white,
right?
Okay, now you're taking away all the good stuff,
right?
And people were eating a lot of it, right? Because it was like the modern cool thing,
right?
And instead of the bread
plus
your mom had to make, right?
Plus it was dirt cheap.
A lot of that modernization stuff was really cool, like washing machines,
right?
Right. Imagine you washed clothes by hand with a rock,
right?
And now there's a machine that does it for you, right? People today, kids today, don't get the technology, right? The technological jump from a phone to a cell phone, it's
right?
nice.
It's still talking.
It's not
on the phone.
Like changing
right.
your whole life, right?
It's like, what? I don't have to pedal this.
So
thing?
when this processed food came out, it was like people wanted to eat it because it was modern, right?
TV dinners.
So now they're getting sick, and so the solution was to reintroduce the vitamins and minerals that were already in the bread. And of course, they spun it to be like a positive. Now with vitamins and minerals, right? Classic example. Did we ever gotta be careful?
Did you ever study? Did you ever read about or study the Ocean Spray commercials? It was one of the few times when the FCC made a company air commercials correcting their previous commercials.
I forget what Ocean Spray was.
Cranberry juice.
Right.
And their commercial said, buy Ocean Spray cranberry juice. It has more food energy than other juices. And the commercials came out.
What is food energy?
The commercials came out later and they said, many of you might not have known that when we said food energy, what we meant were calories.
Oh, they made them run a correction. Okay. Well, the thing about cranberry juice generally too is it's cran apple.
Yeah.
It's got like a half of a quarter of a cranberry slice squeezed and squished
delicious.
In there.
It's just delicious. Spectacular stuff. It's been one of my favorite parts of Thanksgiving is the cranberry sauce.
Absolutely.
Right?
The real kind, not the one that comes out shaped like a can.
Oh, no, that's the stuff.
No,
yeah, it's the processed
the
stuff.
One, no.
I made my mom put it in this narrow trough.
Slice
with the
no, it, cranberries.
It came out. It had the ridges still in the That was the best, dude. It's Ed over here he's looking a little green and
my
weak.
Wife's family is that same as you. They want the canned kind. They get real cranberries, like there's a little bowl of them for me only. I'm the only one who eats them. Bunch of weirdos.
Getting
dying from eating white bread.
Exactly. Hey, dude, all I know is that when I was a kid, a TV dinner was the most awesome thing on the planet.
Hey,
right?
This is called subtracting.
What do you mean?
Take it away.
I totally don't get it.
Totally.
I just
walked right into that.
Where did it go?
Yeah.
I missed that entirely.
Okay, Michael's podcast ideas.
Oh, well, hold on. I was going to bring a toy elephant and have it in here.
A Metzler elephant?
No, so we could ignore the elephant in the room. But we've already talked about it. We can't ignore the elephant in the room.
Well, we'd have to until the end of the season. He has to win the championship for Yamaha this year, and then he can go to Ducati and do the same.
Yeah, right. You know what?
Remember I said, I hope it was on a podcast, how Yamaha had to cancel a bunch of celebrations because of Rossi's bad behavior?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the key reasons that Lorenzo was pissed off and just done with having to deal with his Rossi shit.
Absolutely.
And then there's the money.
Yeah,
what was the number one rule for a racer, Michael?
You got to get paid, yo.
I think he's getting paid, right?
Oh, my God. Well,
basically, you would race a scooter
for that money,
right?
With no helmet in a bikini,
yeah.
Right? No, dude, because you know what the negotiation started with. Ducati, hi, George, we'd like you to ride for us. George, let's start talking at a number higher than you ever paid Rossi. You know, and that's where if you can't go there, we're not even gonna have another phone conversation.
So, how much faster? What percentage of Lorenzo's speed do you suppose I would be on the same bike? 90%? 80%?
I don't know. I don't know, dude.
I'm here to let Ducati know that I will race for 80% of what Lorenzo is getting paid on whatever bike they want me on.
Dude, I'll race.
It can be a GP2. I don't care.
I'll race the Aprilia. I will absolutely race the Aprilia for $100 a race and expenses plus $100. You know why? Because I'll be last two. Actually, they're doing
good. I'm impressed.
Well,
I'm happy.
I'm happy they're there, but they're really their results look better than they actually are. They're about 2 seconds a lap off the pace.
2 seconds a lap off Lorenzo is still crazy fast.
It's still crazy fast.
Oh, wait.
But in
2 seconds off of
Marquez
at Kona,
crazy
right?
fast. But in this universe, what that means is that by the time the first half of a first lap is over, you're no longer on the TV camera.
They're getting TV time.
I've been bitching
about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they need to show farther down. Where mm-hmm. where did we just race last?
Kota.
And right. It helped that Marquez just checked out. But they showed all the way to the back. They did a bunch of times. It was really good.
Right.
And they're not getting lapped. And they're making improvements, and they look good, and they're in the show.
Yeah,
so
they are in the show.
Quit having a double standard.
All I'm saying is that I'll be willing to do as poorly. I got to gloat a little bit, though. Did you see who's absolutely last on the timesheets this morning?
No.
What's his name?
My man was top, as far as I looked.
Rabat. He's moving up from Moto2. He's learning how to ride a MotoGP bike.
He's being smart.
Right? And then Jack Miller.
Yeah.
Karma's ugly. Karma is just an ugly thing, you know? Spectacular. But anyway, okay.
What's going to be spectacular is that when Jack gets his shit together and starts performing the way he could, that's going to be fun to watch.
That, you know,
I would so much rather see a guy succeed than to implode.
You know, hey, so, here's step number one. Take the Jackass logo off of your leathers.
Well, and also there's that guy with the Maniac logo. I'd be willing to bet that goes away at the end of season.
Do you know that he was supposed to, from what I read on Moto Matters? No, Julian Ryder posted it on Superbike Planet, I think, that they were going to announce his contract extension at COTA. And
got put on delay when he fucked up.
Yeah, they said, what did they say? We'll talk to you at Mugello, maybe.
Who wouldn't be pissed off about that, right?
Oh, God, that's just... Yeah.
I mean, the complete opposite is Pedroza took out... The same guy, Dubioso.
Yeah, yeah.
At the turn one. And that was clearly just a mistake early in the race. And, of course, he went right over... Man, what a great shot, though, with the camera on the front of the bike.
I mean,
it's a bummer, and it's only good because nobody got hurt.
Yeah, yeah.
But that thing just torpedoed in there.
That was just wow.
So, I think fantastic for Lorenzo to go to Ducati. I think he's making a good choice.
I would agree.
Of course, staying at Yamaha would have been a good choice, too, right?
Yeah, that's a matter of opinion. I want to say this about the Pedrosa thing. Yeah, Danny did the right thing. And then Danny took his helmet off, walked down to the pits and apologized, right? But holy crap, people are praising him like he performed miracles, laying of hands and walking on water.
That's mostly, I think, Americans who are realizing they were holding a grudge against him unfairly for too long. They're trying to make up for it now.
But I mean,
because Danny did just do what you're supposed to do, and nothing more.
Right.
You get told, hey, good, and that's it. Yeah,
it was the Chris Rock thing. Do you remember him?
No.
Is it people talking about, well, I ain't never been to jail. You're not supposed to go.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. I take care of my kids. What do you want to cook? Cookie? You low expectation having mother.
Exactly. I agree.
I think it's absolutely good for Lorenzo to go. Okay, I think the joke I made about you guys in the pits over there, or in the garage over there, oh God, somebody's ego is crowding out all the oxygen. Dude, it must be hard to breathe in the Yamaha garage if you're not Valentino Rossi.
Oh, yeah,
it's just
absolutely.
Like, it's just become all about him in there. It's what it seems
I think for Lorenzo, the bike and the salary, because he's making enough money, that it doesn't really matter.
Right.
More of too much is still more.
It's always about money. It's a way of keeping
score. The guy's not going to have to worry about eating, right? He's got a house. He's fine. So the amount of money is not as important. The two bikes, they both have a real shot for the championship. So that is kind of equal. So like everything being equal and your neighbor is an asshole, well, I'm going to move.
Okay, two things. Number one, first, those people can, especially motorcycle road racers, can always go broke. Okay, they're like any other professional athlete.
He's too smart for that.
And let's hope, okay? But you would think the same thing about Mick Doohan. And you heard anything about his enterprise lately? Dude, the half-life of a retired racer is, and these people do stupid things with money. So I hope Lorenzo's smarter.
Well, big money makes you stupid. That's the problem, right?
You know, I mean, you remember
everybody who wins the lottery knows this.
The Chicago Bulls, you know, Scottie Pippen. I was there in Chicago covering, you know, that when they won their titles. And next thing I know, next time I read about him, he's in bankruptcy court. You know, it's just so, I mean, the money does matter.
But Lorenzo, like, has property and houses and things like that. He's got real stuff, right? So maybe you can't spend money like crazy anymore because you spent too much of it, but you still got a place to live, right?
But it's also not just about the money. It's about the fame at some level.
Well, yeah,
you know,
you don't want to fucking win a championship, to win the most points, win the most, they don't celebrate it because you're an asshole teammate.
Did you read the Julian Ryder column about...
Pride is really important to guys
exactly.
Like these, right? Pride is what makes you get up at 2 in the fucking morning and go run 20 miles every day and all that shit, right?
Yep.
You don't do that because girls are screaming your name. You do that because you're driven. And you want to be
recognized. You want to be,
When I got the Alfred Montgomery Award from the Motorcycle Dealer Association in Hawaii, it's an award they give out for somebody who did lots of good stuff for the industry, right? I'm awarded that award. That was a great thing. And the guy who presented it was drunk. And it like destroyed it. It was like ruined it for me, you know, right? Same kind
of
thing.
What? Oh, yeah. Dude, not to piss on anybody's parade. But I'll tell you, one of the mistakes at Moto West GP, the local, the club that races at Willow, one of the big PR mistakes that they made was just not having the award ceremony the second season. And I can't tell you how many dudes who won championships told me later that they were upset about
the,
that.
The thing at the end of the year, the dinner party, or
exactly,
whatever.
Because you know, you worked, one of the guys spent 40 grand, you know, racing an SV out here, and I won championships, and I got nothing. You know, I got nothing for
it. It's easy to belittle our little year-end banquet award thingies and whatever. They were just all looking at each other and saying thank you to each other. But it's enjoyable to do it.
It is.
You know, when we started doing that in Hawaii, it just made the whole thing feel
real,
more serious, a little better, nice. Right? I mean, it's just a group of friends getting together and having dinner. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
You don't have to go if you don't want to go.
Now you take that and put it on the MotoGP level.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and it's just like, and there's another thing too here.
Somebody's walking in my trailer.
Really?
Well, that's why the motorhome's shaking.
Oh, no, that was just me. I got gas. Dude, I laugh all the time in front of my students, and I am just cracking up, and it's dead silent out there, and I laugh even harder because they're just terrified. All right.
You think it's terrified? You don't think it's just shaking their head?
They're just like, oh, God, this guy's completely out of his mind. You know, I still get paid. The other thing is fame, and somebody pointed out, you know, George is never going to be, even though he won't say it, okay, he's never going to be the number one at Yamaha. As somebody said, no matter how many championships he wins, he's always going to be Rossi's teammate, as long as he stays there. That's a big deal, too.
You know what? If I'm on a team, everybody else is my teammate.
I don't get it.
That's the way I think.
That I'm always the number one rider?
That's right.
Yeah. But again, you know, it's ego and pride and that sort of thing. And that's one of the things I think that a lot of people don't understand when you get to that rarefied level of celebrity. And Lorenzo is not in that atmosphere. Rossi is. And that's, you know, people...
Splicing hairs.
No.
I say it's simpler than that. All else being equal, and you don't have to be Rossi's neighbor anymore, you're going to move out.
Okay.
So
why does Rossi behave like an asshole? To protect that rarefied air status. Now, here's the question.
I think he's behaving this way because he's been brought up with, you know, as a prince. He's never had to deal with, right? And that's why he behaved so badly last year when he starts to see it going away.
I will
say, he's not going to win another championship.
He's not going to
win another race.
I know you're not a fan of Superbike Planet, but Dean said one thing. He said, when you live in Rossi's atmosphere, like Michael Jackson, everybody that you see, everybody you run into is thrilled to death to see you. And if they're not, you pay them to go away. You know, that you get to shape your own world with that level, at that level.
It's unhealthy.
But there's something where you're wrong, Ed, and I'd like to point that out now.
Good luck.
You think the Ducati's capable of winning a championship?
We're going to find out next year.
Yeah, I think we are. I'm not sure.
That's why we race, my friend.
Absolutely. Well, but there's this whole thing that I keep reading about, Lorenzo's going to go there and he's immediately going to win races.
I didn't say that. I said he can win a championship with it. That doesn't mean he will. I'm saying he can.
I'm not...
And remember, it's going to be better next year.
Is it?
Well, I mean, they could do the Honda thing and take a perfect bike and fuck it all up so Marquez can't do anything with it.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're going to. Look how many Ducatis they have.
Right.
And look at the success that they're having through the depth of that field. And look at the hard work they're doing sharing the data. You can see on TV Ducati guys going to the B team and a C team and talking to them. You don't see that with the Hondas and the Yamaha teams.
That doesn't mean
it's not happening, but if it's happening so much that you
see it,
happening a lot.
Now, and having said all of that, and granted, you know, Dovizioso has got to stop racing with the target on the back of his leathers, right? But, I mean, having said that, dude, Argentina, there's no way anybody
should have had this discussion. Right. Argentina was an outlier with a horrible condition. It doesn't mean anything.
Okay.
Let's see what happens at this race.
But we're talking about three tracks in a row that should...
All that were weird.
But they should have worked to the Ducati's advantage.
How does having a dust-covered, wet track work to anybody's advantage?
Because those tracks were...
And by the way, those guys were going to take, what, second and third?
Right, but
at Argentina.
But they were still seconds behind a bike that was everybody's...
Everybody was seconds behind that bike.
But
it was a flag-to-flag race. It was all weird.
It was all weird, granted, and all
but you,
that.
You but, can't say granted and then ignore it.
I'm going to ignore it, Ed. Why? Because it's my podcast, or it's our podcast, and I have the right to ignore it. No, just here's the thing, okay? That bike allegedly was so slow, and so, I'm talking about the Honda now, was so slow and so bad at the beginning of the season. How did people on these incredibly fast tracks with the highest top speeds in MotoGP, how do you get beat on that bike on those tracks?
You ready for the answer?
Yeah, hit me.
I will tell you at the end of next season who wins. That's why it's called racing. Look, I've made my point about Argentina. You can't draw any conclusions
from
it.
What about Cota, though?
It's Ross. It's Marquez's track.
Okay.
I mean, he wins there no matter what.
And Qatar.
That place has always been weird. It's the first race of the year. It's in the fucking nighttime.
Okay, we'll see what happens at Jerez.
Yeah, well, what we're going to see is the backside of Lorenzo at Jerez.
Right, most likely. Holy crap. God, was it gorgeous to watch that dude qualify at Cota? I mean, it was just, it's exciting to watch Marquez, but it's just like watching Lorenzo ride that thing. It's wow.
So why are you asking me what the worst weather conditions I've ever raced in?
Oh, because I watched the Le Mans 24-hour race. Those dudes, by the way, are Iron Men. Those dudes who, one of the teams, one of the guys binned it in like the first hour and put himself out with a broken collarbone. And the other two dudes had to do the rest of the 24 hours.
That's hard.
That was hard. But I mean, like, I'm watching and it was the British Eurosport feed, something like that.
Okay, so the worst weather conditions I ever raced in.
Wait a minute, hold on. I just want you to compare.
Well, you're trying to go to the next
question. Yeah, we got plenty.
Question.
No.
No? Okay.
British, they said, I was listening to the announcers and they're like, well, it's pretty chilly. The temperatures are 4 degrees. And I'm like, 4? And I'm like, oh, okay, not... And then I calculated in Celsius. I'm like, 4? That's still freaking cold. That's 4 degrees Celsius above freezing.
So one year they ran the 24-hour at Willow in April instead of in September.
Right.
Which we thought, okay, it won't be so hot. It'll be good. So it's 40 degrees at night, you're going 100 miles an hour. Right. Plus, what's the wind chill factor for your hands?
Right.
Like, can't move your hand fast enough to reach out.
How long did it take for that? How many laps?
Yeah, to slow down. No, it didn't. It got colder and colder and colder as you went. It got worse and worse.
Right.
And this was before we had doctor gloves. Like, nowadays, you put the blue doctor gloves on and it makes a magic difference. It's
really?
Unbelievable.
Okay.
Nobody had those back then. And of course, we were all guys from Hawaii, so it was just times 10 for us. And then the other one was, when you say worst, I'm taking it in the, like, I didn't like it.
Yeah.
So 24 hours in Nelson Legends, fog comes out and the frogs come out on the racetrack and you can't see where you're going because the fog and the smoke from the bonfires.
Right.
And people are shooting bottle rockets at you and the track's really bumpy. That was really bad conditions. But the worst, as in like pouring down rain.
Okay.
Was at Seattle. In the endurance race.
There's a surprise.
SIR. It was raining so hard, there was like ankle-deep river flowing across the track down on the backside at the bottom part.
Oh, my God.
And you'd go through there, and it would snap the bars to the lock to the left or the right when you hit the water, and then it would straighten out on the other side.
Oh, Jesus.
The hydroplane was fucking awesome. That was fun.
If
it rains hard enough, right, you're like, it's all good.
Right.
Of course, we were on DOT tires because we didn't have rain tires for the endurance race.
Oh, my God. I raced at Willow once and it was so cold between the snow flurries. Bikes were blowing up because people weren't letting them warm up.
Right.
Right. And then the oil dry wouldn't work.
No.
Because it was so cold.
Nothing worked. Yeah.
That was really nasty.
When it's that cold, I don't go out. I was somewhere working with somebody. What's that track in Jennings, Florida?
Jennings GP.
And they are rolling out onto the grid, and you can hear the ice crackling under the tires. And I'm like, why are we riding, boss? What's the point? Are you going to come in and tell me blah, 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 and I'm going to do what? I'm going to change your bike so it works when there's ice on the track?
There's ice on the track.
I'm not going to change a fucking thing, you stupid. Get your ass back in the pits.
Get the notebook. What are the ice settings?
Yeah, right? You're on slicks, for crying out loud.
I will
have a bigger main jet.
I'm That was, I watched that race and I just, you know, those guys are just amazing. Big, heavy, I mean, you know, with carrying 8 gallons of fuel on the bike, you know, still got amazing lean angle, and they're doing it for an hour and a half at a pop. They get off the bike, the crew changes the tires and everything in 12 seconds, you know. They go in the back and they sip orange juice till they got to go do it again. And I'm gonna criticize some of the MotoGP guys, because there was a question after Argentina, after Hector Barbera nailed his crew guy, whether or not changing and doing wheel changes would be safer, you know. Somebody said, well, you know, we're not.
How would doing wheel changes have any bearing on crashing coming into the pits?
You're either going to change bikes or wouldn't. But you don't.
He just lost the front, and the bike slid and hit the guy.
It wasn't like he was trying to do anything or did anything stupid.
It's like watch NASCAR race. Guys get run over every month.
So, but I guess the question was, is it safer to do pit stops, traditional ones like they do in endurance racing?
It's not about safer or not safer. It's about they've got two bikes.
Right.
And they have this rule that they use to solve the TV and the rain show. And so just use the same rule to solve the weird shit and don't fuck around.
And
it's way safer to change bikes because it means you're not rushing to do the pit stops. And those guys that are doing the pit stops super fast, they're carrying a ton of extra weight to make the pit stop really fast.
Are they? Well, that's the question. Is it a ton of extra weight?
A lot.
Number two.
And it's unsprung weight.
And granted, all that, right? But still.
You keep saying granted, but still.
You're going to tell me that the World Endurance guys can do what the MotoGP crews can't?
It's two different shows. They want to have two different shows.
I know, and maybe I'm
You're not allowed to use multiple bikes in endurance. It's no longer endurance. So you have to change the wheels.
Maybe it's paranoia, okay? But when I see Marquez jump from bike to bike, all I think of is man, if he hits...
Have you ever watched the Olympics?
Hold on.
People spin around fucking poles up in the sky.
Yeah, but
they're
not jumping.
They're not wearing leathers either.
And they're not jumping onto the shift lever of a 280 horsepower machine.
Well, nothing's happened yet.
But I'm just saying, that makes me nervous.
But okay, but if when your bike is sitting and idling and you clunk it in the gear, what happens? It stalls.
Yeah, because my bike has 48 horsepower.
No, Michael, how much bike does your bike have at idle?
Very little.
And how much horsepower does a 200 horsepower bike have at idle?
You know, those things have like 70 horsepower at 400 RPM.
It will stall.
Let's hope.
No,
you know?
It will stall.
You know, that's all I'm saying. I'm just cautious. I can just sort of see it going wrong. I'm the guy, shit goes wrong. I know, but I'm saying.
People have crashed here today at this racetrack.
I know.
You know what?
What?
People are going to crash tomorrow.
I know.
They're going to crash on Sunday here, too.
I know. But they
and then you still do it.
Exactly. But we don't do it when there's ice on the track, do we? Here, have
nope,
a bigger main
we
jet.
Don't.
That's, you know what? That's going to be my new euphemism for fuck you. It's going to be like, yeah, really? Yeah, here, have a bigger main jet. What else? How are we doing on time? Where are we? Do we have a 2-minute board?
We can use one of these.
Okay.
Oh, we're over time. It's time to wrap this up.
All right.
So the 2-minute board is from your question, have I ever crashed twice in a single sprint race? No, I have not. My record is 3 crashes in 1 day of racing.
Okay. But that was an endurance race?
No, sprint racing.
Okay.
I borrowed other bikes so I could keep crashing.
Okay, that's even better than here. I have a bigger main jet.
My friend Bruce Miller.
Yes.
Crashed twice.
Okay.
In the same race.
Got it.
In the same corner.
That's pretty good.
He crashed going in. His bike was still running. When he picked it up, the throttle cable that looped around the turn signals, because his turn signals were still on, because he rode the bike to the track. And then when he jumped on the bike and simultaneously let the clutch out, it just took off across and into the trees on the outside of the exit of the corner. I have never seen anybody so pissed off that while I saw I'm coming on the corner and his back is to me, he's looking into the trees and I can see the anger
behind his helmet. Like a heat haze over him. Oh,
hilarious.
Beautiful.
He's Michael Gugis.
He said Sorbo. Aloha.